Welcome in to the Blake Street Banter. It's the Rockies Insider. Patrick Lyons on Blake Street Banter, joined by my wonderful co-host, Noah Spyrek. Noah, we got to see each other in person, and you got to see the Rockies in person last week.
I did, and I got to see the one win per week. It was glorious over the Yankees, but I'm smiling because, man, that intro, whoever put that together, that's new, and that is awesome. So shout out to the BSB team.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, Zach Grant, who works at CSU, he's joined the Blake Street Banner team and doing some awesome videography. If you saw the interview with Zach Agnos and Seth Halverson, I was there firing away at the questions, and he was there on the video. So I imagine he has something to do with that. So yeah, really, really great job stepping up the intro, and you've been stepping it up. We're going to talk about a lot. We're going to cover a lot today since you and I were not together last week, but you had a really busy week. And before we get to the Rockies part of the busyness, what have you got ahead of yourself, you know, this summer and this next week in terms of the Spyrek summer? Because it's a busy one for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a summer tour. I mean, you know, I get home from finals week, and the following morning I'm in the car for 12 hours for a family vacation in South Carolina. There for a week, come back, you know, drive home, get home at about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And the following morning I had a 5 a.m. flight to Denver. And so that's where I've been for the past week or so now, a little bit more than that. And like you said, got to enjoy the Rockies last week at Coors Field, got to 6 ball games and witnessed a great, great, well-played win over the Yankees. And then right now I was supposed to be in the mountains camping, but due to some camper issues, life issues, here in Denver again, ready to record with Patrick Lyons, talk about the Rockies. But upcoming, only in Colorado for another week, and then I return to Indiana for just about 5 days before I'm off to Massachusetts and enjoying my summer job up there at a kids camp. So it should be fun.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I want to talk about your takeaways, because I know you had a lot on your list of things you wanted to get to the bottom to, questions that you had, answers you were hoping to get. But this Cubs series, look, the games have been close. It's been the same typical result. Rockies now have 18 consecutive series losses, 21 consecutive series losses dating back to last year, OptiSports noting that is the longest streak in MLB history. So no tied series, no break even, 1-1 or 2-2. Just straight losing 21 consecutive series. Wow.
It's hard to fathom. Thinking about this year, having 18 straight, you know, you can add in the 3 from last year. I find it hard to include that in the record because it's 2 separate seasons with 2 very different teams. But the fact that it is about to turn to June and the Rockies are looking for their first series win and split, that one also hurts the mind a little bit, that they haven't split a 4-gamer yet. It's hard to believe.
It's difficult. Yeah. So last week, going into the week, that was the 7-game homestand. I think I know the answer, but maybe not. Maybe it's a tie, but what were you more excited about in terms of getting to the ballpark? Not every day in particular, but leading up to it, were you excited about the fact that you're going to see one of the best teams in the National League in the Philadelphia Phillies for 4, and or excited about one of the best teams in the American League in the New York Yankees? Or was it the first in-season managerial change for the Colorado Rockies in 16 years?
Yeah, you know, when you put it like that, there were plenty of storylines last year or last week around a team that hasn't had very much success. I think it's cool. I was very excited to see the Yankees in person because didn't get to do that last year. And by chance, last season, after school ended, my first series at Coors Field was against the Phillies, and it just happened to turn out that way again this year. So getting to witness the Phillies play without Bryce Harper getting ejected, because that typically happens at Coors Field, it's got a weird pattern of that. That was cool. Watching the Yankees come in and their fans, my goodness, we could have a whole show about how many Yankee fans there were at Coors Field. That was a great series, and the Rockies in the rubber match were, you know, runner on second with one out, just could not get the equalizer across to maybe steal their first series win of the year. But yeah, you mentioned it. Warren Schaefer, his first media scrums as a manager at home at Coors Field, was able to secure his first Coors Field win as a manager of the Rockies. Didn't think about it in the moment, but now that you're saying it, yeah, that's even more history that I witnessed.
Yeah, it was a wild week to say the least. And look, as I said before, that with the Cubs series has been kind of similar results and going into extra innings at Wrigley, where the Rockies had a 3-game extra inning winning streak at Wrigley Field, which also included the 2018 NL wildcard game. Obviously, that did not come to fruition on Tuesday. Do want to talk about Herman Marquez in just a little bit. But you wrote down some questions that you were hoping to try to get some answers to and figure out sort of what was going on or what wasn't going on. What's maybe one of the top things that stood out for you or top answers that you got in getting to see this team, this clubhouse, and this organization a lot more up close at the ballpark than the previous 8 or so weeks doing it from home?
Yeah, well, watching from home, you see what's not working much more than you see what is. And that's true of any team with a losing record. But sitting on the couch at home, you can read all the stats. Rockies, second to last in runs scored, last in runs allowed, most errors in the league. And I wanted to go to Coors and see the difference in routines from last year to this year. Because last year, pregame, you'd get there early, listen to Bud Black talk, and I'd always see Warren Schaefer out there with the machine feeding the infielders ground balls, working on forehand, backhand, all of the pickups. Now this year, with Warren stepping into a greater leadership role and elevating other coaches into larger roles in the developmental side, one of the things I saw that I had never seen before was Clint Hurdle, the Rockies bench coach, hitting coach. His role has evolved multiple times this season. At one point, the pitching machine during BP was a good 10 feet to the right of the mound if you're standing in the batter's box. And they were working on just not trying to not pull off the ball. Take the ball to right field, go the opposite way, take what the pitcher gives you. And I think the Rockies need to have that mindset more because, you know, this note was as of last week, but the Rockies had been held to 3 or fewer runs in 33 of their first 47 games and 6 of their last 7 at the point I had written that. So, you know, it's one thing to be a bad baseball team and entertaining. And I think for the majority of the Colorado Rockies history, that's been generally true. But when you're not scoring, it is hard for the fans to stay engaged. And one of the things I wanted to find out at Coors Field was the offensive philosophy. And I think I walk away not with an answer, but understanding that they're trying to change things.
No, I think that's a fair takeaway because, again, there's plenty of philosophies, I think, that float around the Rockies and have, you know, slightly shifted, but it hasn't been any kind of major change, but they are trying different things. You're right. That was an interesting, you know, workout that they had with the pitching machines to the right and to the left of the mound, kind of hitting just these different kind of angles, going with the pitch or going away, going the opposite field. That was helpful. Clint Hurdle running that. And as you were talking, it made me think about the fact that the Rockies don't actually have a hitting coach right now. They have two co-hitting coaches. And in seeing Clint Hurdle run that drill, and this is something that the Rockies unfortunately do a lot, is they have people with blended roles. They have people doing two jobs at once. And so Clint Hurdle's the bench coach, and yet he's running a hitting coach drill. And so, okay, so Clint Hurdle, I guess, is the bench coach and the hitting coach. And then you have two assistant coaches that we're just going to call co-hitting coaches in Jordan Pacheco and Nick Wilson. So again, the Rockies doing things differently when they really don't need to. But that was nice to see that they were trying a different approach altogether and also doing something differently with Michael Tolia, whether you agree with it or not. Perhaps maybe some resistance to change, which is true, I think, of a lot of big leaguers who, again, just almost on their natural ability alone or minor tweaks that they're able to make, either with their own personal hitting coach, with their father, with a family member, with friends saying, hey, get back to this. They can almost get to the show completely on their own. And then, you know, when they're faced with big league pitching and they have some difficulty, it's harder to make certain changes or adaptations. And it's harder to listen to people that maybe they don't know quite as well. And so, you know, was that some of what was going on behind the scenes with Michael Tolia sitting for 3 days? Perhaps. But, you know, we haven't seen a major shift for Tolia. He has looked a little bit better at the plate, but results not fully there altogether for him yet. But I thought that was something that we just really wouldn't have seen in the past under Bud Black. So they are trying some different things. The results, as we know, have not been any different. But it, again, it is nice to see something different happening.
Yeah, and another thing that I was intrigued to find out was how Warren Schaefer would address the media and speak, because Bud Black, with all of his experience, had a lot of great stories. And so typically when he'd answer a question, you know, it would often trail into a story of another time where, you know, the answer could be applied there. I was really impressed with how Schaefer spoke with conviction with almost every word. Occasionally he'd ask us to repeat the question, make sure he's getting it right. And I know that you posted the clip of, you know, someone had asked a question about, you know, the reality is what it is. The Rockies, May 28th, they don't have 10 wins yet. And Schaefer said, look, as big leaguers, we cannot, and I quote, wallow in our pit. That'd be shameful to do as men, as ball players. And he said that in 3 years from now, the Rockies need to look back at this period and say, man, we attacked that the right way. We handled that as professionals and made all the improvements that we could in a time where they had to be made. This is uncharted territory for any baseball team in the modern era. And so I guess, Patrick, I'm just wondering your thoughts, because that clip, you know, a lot of people on social media had something to say about it. And I was impressed by the way he carried himself through that answer.
I've talked about it a lot after he made those comments, but it's interesting because I think that could be almost interpreted in two different ways. There's the interpretation that I have about, again, doing and learning from the past a little bit, doing certain things now to bring about a better future again. And that's something that is pretty basic for a baseball team at the trade deadline, to trade away your best assets, to bring in better players in the future, especially if we're talking 3 years from now. How many players are going to be free agents between now and 3 years? Between even if you want to just say the 2027 season, right? 2027, 2028, whatever it is, there's going to be a couple. So those players, why should they be kept around? It's something that I said back in 2000 and 2021 when the topic of Herman Marquez came up, and it was, well, you know, he's got a ton of value, and it would really stink to not see him pitching games at Coors Field anymore and representing the Rockies in the All-Star game, all that good stuff. But why are you going to keep him around when you can actually get an asset that's going to be worth a lot more when you need it? Because when you trade Herman Marquez with 2 or even 3 years remaining, more likely than not, you are going to get at least one player that has 6+ years of club control, maybe even 2 really good players. Like when the Rockies traded Nolan Arenado, I think there was maybe 6 years left on his deal, 5 years left on his deal. And they got, again, if you include the minor leaguers, each one of those minor leaguers has 6 years of club control. So you're getting, you know, 20, 25 years of club control. It's a little bit different if those prospects are very far away and they're not guaranteed, some of whom haven't even made their debut yet. But you can look and say, oh, wow, yeah, that makes a lot more sense, rather than keeping a guy around and almost wasting his production. It's not wasted on the fans. It's not wasted on diehards looking, you know, at a box score or going to the game. You want to see those players, but you also want to win. That's part of the sacrifice. So my worry would be that the front office looks and says, okay, we need to think about, you know, 3 years into the future, but also 3 years into the past. And I think the Rockies do a decent job, not a good job. They do a decent job at looking 3 years into the past and say, what should we do now that we should have done 3 years ago? Which means they are now essentially 6 years behind schedule. Because if they should have done it 3 years ago, that means maybe everybody else has done it. And if you did it 3 years ago, you would be 3 years into a cycle of something good happening, but you're just starting it now, which means in 3 years from now is when you'll finally have that thing. So you're 6 years behind. And I hope that the message that is taken is, again, you have an opportunity right now to improve the future of your club from 3 years from now. Not always look back and say, you know, what should we have learned from 2022? It's already too late. You should have learned what you should have done in 2022 back in 2019 when you did nothing at the trade deadline. So you have to learn from those mistakes in real time and just be more proactive, because the Rockies are always reactive far too late and they are not proactive. I can't even tell you right now, Noah, what the Rockies could do or should do to be proactive because they're so broken. If you listen to the words that I'm saying, you might take away like, okay, well then they should trade Tovar and they should trade Doyle to bring in, you know, some really great prospects, but you would have to really trust the front office and the guys that are in place right now to trade these really good assets in terms of Tovar, maybe even a great asset, especially considering where his contract is at, but trading that and then getting back as much as you can possible. You can wait 2 more years and still get back more with a better front office than what the current front office has. That would be part of the debate. So I think, yeah, that is, I don't think that's taking the front office or the organization to task, but it's really one of the first times, as you've noted, that somebody within the organization has publicly made it clear the opportunity that you have, even when you're bad, to get better. And you can only do that if you have a plan in place. And the Rockies don't really have much of a plan in place. Warren Schaefer does. He's doing things differently, but the front office is not. So I hope that they are interpreting that message the right way, not just a way.
Yeah, and I want to, in hearing you speak, I can sense your passion, because you know you've covered this team for years, and a notion that I've seen on social media a lot is, well, you know, the Rockies are where they are, but at least enjoy being historic. And I saw your response to someone with that last night saying, you know, honestly, sure, it might be a cool story to tell the grandkids one day, but right now it's pretty defeating to be a part of. And I sense that in the fullest extent. And I think the fans that haven't checked out on the team, and that's a whole nother conversation once fans become apathetic, but the fans that haven't checked out and they still watch the games, you know, the reality is the team has 9 wins. I imagine that most people watching now are not watching to get joy from winning, but they're watching to get the smaller victories in a Germán Márquez quality start, which has been coming up more and more recently. I just, one of the questions I had was, you know, does a managerial change matter if the team philosophy stays the same? And I think building off what you just said about Coach Schaefer, he can, or Schaefer managing the team, not coaching, he can have a vision and do everything he can at the major league level. But when the front office runs the team in a way that they have, it makes it so much harder for Schaefer to be successful with the pieces he has in place. You speak about being proactive, and in the minor leagues right now, Ryan Ritter is on the best tear a ball player could be on in AAA. And then the news comes out that Orlando Arcia is going to be a Rocky. And in respect to him, he has not done much notable things in recent years. It's a question that all Rockies fans are asking. Why would the Rockies make this move with Ryan Ritter doing everything he can to seemingly push himself into major league play?
No, it's a great question. And I think some of it has to do with the timeline of events, where Ritter just continues to play really well. And with each day that goes by, it's another 2-homer game, which was the case on Tuesday after the off day on Monday. And yeah, it stinks to see, because there was even, I think it might've been Baseball America saying, man, it's like any second now, this guy is going to get called up. And if you know the Rockies, it doesn't mean anything, because they've got Tyro Estrada coming back, and the only thing the Rockies can, you know, talk about during this awful start to their season is, well, if we had Tyro Estrada, well, we'd have 12 wins, and so everything would be fine. Like, It's really bad. You know, you do have Ezekiel Tovar at shortstop, so Ryan Ritter's not going to be playing there. Ryan McMahon is still at third base, and Ritter is a guy that's probably, you know, better suited at second base, maybe more so than shortstop, certainly not a better defender than Tovar. Can he play some third base? Possibly. But again, he's blocked there. So normally when you have a top prospect knocking on the door or knocking down the door, kicking it in the way Ryan Ritter is doing, you want to reward that kind of player. And the Rockies are just in such a mode of, well, these things will sort themselves out, quote unquote. And that's where you look and there's like still 9 outfielders on the roster, despite the fact that they are only keeping 4. And, you know, they went from retiring a 38-year-old great in Charlie Blackmon to bringing in a 34-year-old guy to play right field in Nick Martini. So they are just a paradox and really not, again, they're not doing the little things well. And, you know, holding space for someone like Ryan Ritter, because no, the plan was Tyro Estrada and Ezekiel Tovar playing great defense. Why should we veer from that? And I think they should veer from that, right? And you also don't know if Estrada is going to be able to come back. They were really trying to rush him back to the majors because normally spring training would be about 40 plate appearances. So maybe you're able to allow him to get 30 plate appearances in Albuquerque before calling him up next week in Miami. We'll allow him a little bit more time down in AAA, call up Ryan Ritter immediately, send Adiel Amador down to AAA, who has been playing better, but still is, you know, does not seem to be even a league average second baseman all around. So he can get more playing time and more seasoning down in AAA. And you have a win-win. And then when Tyro Estrada is ready to come back, maybe you slowly work him in. And maybe by that point, after, you know, a week or 2 weeks, Ryan Ritter is just okay. Like a similar to like what you saw out of Zach Veen, where there was some of those moments, and then you can send Ryan Ritter down. Or, and again, that's a worst case scenario, and that's not even so bad because you just got another guy more playing time that was going to be on your 40-man roster this winter anyway in Ryan Ritter. Or Ryan Ritter sticks, and maybe, I don't want to say he has a Trevor Story-like start because, look, that was historic, but he becomes one of those players where you say, oh, wow, this guy wasn't even like a top 25 prospect, and he hit the ground running. Maybe he ends up sticking. Maybe there is something different about Ryan Ritter. But if you don't give him that opportunity because you are waiting for Tyro Estrada, who will not be around in a couple years, whereas Ryan Ritter will be around in a couple years, you need to make those changes. And I think the Rockies top brass would say, well, we don't think Ryan Ritter is ready and he's got to work on those kind of things. That may be true. That may be not. You know, work on those things for that player to get him ready a little bit quicker, because these players are taking far too long to get themselves ready, or the Rockies just deem them to be not ready when by all accounts they do look ready. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. But Ryan Ritter, I hope he does get an opportunity. Maybe the Rockies will surprise. He gets called up in New York and he gets a chance to experience Citi Field for just a little bit. And if it, you know, again, it ends up being that he gets sent back down to AAA, that's still invaluable experience for Ryan Ritter, who deserves it. And you are also sending a message to the rest of the prospects and the rest of the players in the minors that when you produce, we will hear you and we will credit you and we will reward you. Right now, that doesn't feel like it's necessarily the case.
Yeah, I love that last part, because the reality is most people that were the most optimistic in the Rockies community, Rockies fan base, figured that 2027 would be a year of competing. And now all of a sudden, the Rockies in 2025 are trying to avoid being the worst team in the history of the sport, which is just hard to even say. You have to think about what team, who will be on the roster in 2027 or 2028. Will Nick Martini? One would not imagine. Even Mickey Moniak. Interesting signing in the offseason, ended up hitting the Rockies' first homer of the year, I believe, in game 3 of the season, and hit one in the 9th inning against the Yankees as well. But he's another guy where it just hasn't worked out in other organizations, and the Rockies have not proven to be a place where, you know, castaways of other teams go to find success. The Dodgers are the exact opposite. You think about a Max Muncy that had been cut from the Athletics at one point, and he turns into a multi-time all-star with the Dodgers and, you know, a potent bat. Now he's, you know, slowed down a little bit, but think about what they turned him into. Even a Yency Almonte, who the Rockies had let go, you know, I 2021, 2022, he was with the Dodgers, pitching well, earning a late inning role for the Dodgers. So I wanted to, in my week here, or 2 weeks, my week of watching games, I wanted to really take count, because you walk into that clubhouse and the near side wall from the entrance is virtually all new guys. All the lockers are switched around with name tags from a year to now. And I thought that was really interesting, because at one point last season, I watched Hunter Goodman pack his bags and as he was optioned to AAA. Now, a year later, you know, if it's not a guy from the bullpen and Jake Bird, Hunter Goodman's probably the Rockies' leading candidate to be an all-star. Just with the time that Tovar has missed, I know he's come on strong since being back. But right now, Hunter Goodman is a candidate to be an all-star. You know, that's a case where you just said, I mean, it's similar to what you just described with Amador. If you send him down, make him pack his bags, go down to the minors, get more playing time, he could come back up and make an impact. And right now, yeah, he just hasn't done that, even though he seems to be getting more comfortable at second base, turned a nice double play in game one against the Yankees. But, you know, you look at this roster, and the biggest question I have as someone that would love the team to compete for a postseason berth, who will be on the 2027 team? And the Orlando Arcia signing just it makes the picture even more blurry for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point for a guy that, again, just is going to be on a 1 year deal. I think, you know, the thing that's hard for me at times, and I can't even say I've learned this, because I don't know to what extent I believe it, but a lot of the older scribes and folks within the organization and just in other teams talk about the value of veteran leadership. Like, you can't have a roster entirely full of young players. And, you know, again, hearing myself say it out loud, I know that that's not true, because there are teams out there that have been very good and successful with minimal amount of veterans. It's just that the veterans that they do have are producing and have been very good. And the Rockies don't have that. They've got $27 million, you know, nearly 20% of what they've got invested in the payroll, invested in Chris Bryant, and you're getting nothing from him. And he's not really doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes as a leader in the clubhouse. So there's just so many things that are broken. And you're right. I think thinking about 2027 is important. And so, you know, even you go back and look at a guy like Jake Cave, you say, okay, well, you know, he is protecting a young outfielder from getting overexposed too early. So there is that benefit. Despite that, young player might be tearing things up in the minor leagues. That's something you again, on one hand, have to trust the professionals in the room, trust the Rockies front office in making those decisions. But on the other hand, it's the Rockies front office that continue to make error after error after error. And so, you know, I don't necessarily believe that, even though I've heard it so much that it's been pounded in my head. I still don't know, you know, really what that value of veteran players in a lot of spots. I think you need some of them, no doubt about it. But I don't think you need a ton. I think now at this point in his career, Ryan McMahon is one of those veterans. He's not that old, and he's been around for a while. So that checks off the entire infield right there. Keep around one older outfielder type, and, you know, to teach the young guys how to play. Like, I think that's got a lot of value. And really, for the most part, other than Martini, Jacob Stallings, you know, they don't have a ton of those older Harold Castro, you know, Jake Cave types on the roster right now. But I think, you know, giving some more opportunities for those young guys. I've been saying it, you know, all off season and the start of this year, there's only so many places on the 40-man roster for guys to go. They've got all these guys that they continued to say, these things will sort themselves out. Well, they're not. They're not sorting themselves out, because you have too many young players and not enough playing time. And at some point, you're going to let somebody go and you're going to get nothing for them, and they're going to have a lot of success somewhere else. And, you know, on one hand, you can look and say, well, is that Justin Lawrence? Yes, he certainly struggled a ton, and the Rockies didn't do, you know, what they potentially could have with him, but they go and just completely cut bait. And before he got hurt with Pittsburgh, he had a sub-1 ERA. And so, you see the potential with these guys. They're just not getting more out of them in the majors, you know, trading Nick Mears, and he's been otherworldly this season for the Brewers. So there are all of these guys that they haven't really been able to maximize their value and potential. And maybe if they take a different approach, sure, 2027. But Noah, unfortunately, I have to remind you that they've been saying 2 or 3 years from now, since 2021, we are now 4 years from 2021, and we're still saying in 2-3 years from now, there's a chance that the next Rockies contender that goes to the postseason only has Ezekiel Tovar from this roster. That's it. There is a chance.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair thing to say. I want to touch on two things that you said. First, with the leadership, on the leadership point, you mentioned Ryan McMahon, and I think Mac absolutely has a role as a leader on the team. As soon as Charlie stepped away last season, Mac was the natural guy to step forward into that. And, you know, it's a year where McMahon, he's hitting 207. I am sure he would love to be playing better, hitting better especially. But it makes it tougher for him to be traded when he is a guy that you want leading your infield. And I know there's been trade talks surrounding McMahon. Feels like that's kind of existed for the last couple of years, and I'm not sure why this year it's percolating even more than last year when he turned out to be an all-star. I struggle to see the Rockies trading McMahon. I don't think there's any fire with that smoke. I don't know if that's a quote, but there you go. And on the second point of you talking about who will be the Rockies letting guys go and then seeing them blossom somewhere else. The talk around the league is that sometimes the Rockies don't understand the value, or they overvalue their own prospects. The timeline is just not synced up to where it should be, where other teams have that figured out. I think number one, the Rockies act uniquely, act in the way that they call their prospects up. Typically they'll let a guy come up, get a taste of the big leagues, then send them back down, figuring out that they weren't ready. A lot of organizations know that their guys are ready, so they come up and they stay with the big league team and they can contribute. That might be more rare than I'm making it sound, but other teams know when their guys are ready before hoping to find out once they're in the big leagues. When the Rockies see their own guys go on to become great with other teams, like a Nick Mears, like a Justin Lawrence, I think it only adds to that struggle to properly value their prospects, because all of a sudden they see that these guys, and you naturally, human nature would tell you, well, what if this guy's got that too? We don't want to let him go. And then all of a sudden it's too late and you can't get the most out of that player, and you've used so much time to try that other teams can't either. So it's a problem that feels unique to the Rockies. I'm not sure if that's true or not.
It is because it's their evaluation. Like you said, too late means there's a time frame, right? Yeah. Like it's past its expiration date. That expiration date for Ryan McMahon was last year, and the Rockies made a choice to not trade him. And now it's too late. Value is less. His contract is going up. He'll make $16 million over the next two seasons in 2026 and 2027. So that becomes further complication. You know, you look at 2021 and you said, oh man, the Rockies, all right, I guess we'll have to take them at their word. Because that's all you can do, is take someone at their word, despite there being certain speculation and other parameters that would suggest that it's not legit. But if you take them at their word, they didn't get any, you know, great suitors for Trevor Story. Keep in mind, in 2021, at the trade deadline, when you trade for a player, you're getting that player for 2 months. What if you could have that player for three times as long? That means you would trade the player before the start of the 2021 season. But why couldn't the Rockies have done that? Because they just traded Nolan Arenado. Now, they still could have done that, yeah. But that would have duplicated, if not, you know, in triplicate, like the pain of the Rockies fan. And that's why I had speculated that during the 2020 season, before things got started back up for the 60-game pandemic, now it's time to trade Nolan Arenado, because the Rockies, again, in theory, well, not in theory, but, you know, I don't want to say technically, the 2020 season was a season. It just wasn't a 162 game season. But if you'd have traded him before that season started on July 23rd, Rockies would have played an entire year, quote unquote, without Nolan Arenado. And by the time the fans ended up coming back, it almost would have been over it. They wouldn't have even realized, oh yeah, that's right, we never got to see Nolan Arenado leave. Or, oh yeah, we saw his last game in 2019 and he hasn't been here, you know, since then. And it's now 2021 and now we're actually just missing Trevor Story. So they're never proactive enough to do those things. And I think one of the reasons why their valuation systems are so skewed and flawed is because they are not acting with a certain baseball acumen. They're not operating with the baseball side of a baseball team in mind. The Tampa Bay Rays are. The Tampa Bay Rays are not operating on the business side of things. They are trading everybody and their mother. This isn't a reference to Juan Soto and his family getting a private jet, or maybe not getting a private jet, whatever. But they will trade everybody and their mother if they can get back what they feel is more. And so because of that, if you're a fan of the Rays, if you're one of those 18 people, you might not know who's on the Rays one season to the next because of that. And at the end of the day, they win. Now, if they were more like the Rockies and they just kept the same guys around and Evan Longoria retired with the Rays and was, you know, never traded to the Giants, would they make, how much more money would they make? They certainly wouldn't have had all their, those postseasons that they did in the 2010s after they got rid of Evan Longoria. No, they wouldn't have. And so I think for the Rockies, they look and say, well, if we're like the Rays, are people going to come out to Coors Field? Because they won't know who's in right field for 14 years, like Charlie Blackmon. They won't know who's at first base, like number 17 in Todd Helton. They won't know that number 28 is at third base in Nolan Arenado. So they're not going to come and we're going to make less money. Rather than looking at it as an opportunity to improve their roster, to win more games, go to the postseason more regularly, and thereby have more people come to the ballpark because they are just a better baseball team. I don't think they have enough confidence in their baseball acumen to make those kind of decisions. And so it's just safer to say, don't worry, the same name is going to be up on the marquee, covered in dust for about a decade, and then maybe we'll move on. But we want you to feel familiar with the players that are on the roster. And if that means we're really bad, so be it. Because let's say we lose 130 games. Are you still going to end up showing up to the ballpark? As it turns out, yeah. So the Rockies were right from that business perspective, but from the baseball perspective, they've gotten it all wrong.
Yeah, and I think the result now is the, what happens when you follow that wrong line of thinking? If they're so concerned about having familiarity between the team and the fans, they wouldn't have an outfield of Jordan Beck, Brenton Doyle, and Nick Martini. Jordan Beck has been the Rockies' most productive hitter, and that really only started 3 weeks, a month ago in Kansas City. But now he has a 125 OPS plus, which leads the team. And as a whole, the Rockies have three guys above league average, Beck, Goodman, and Tovar. So, good. That's your young core. The Rockies are trying to sell everything on Ezekiel Tovar to the fans because he has to be the next face of the franchise, or a guy like Doyle, but he's taken some large steps in the wrong direction this year.
Shop Wayfair now, month long quick deals. Yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong. Check out this song. Best gift in four. Black Friday scores.
Garlands and trees.
Saving with ease.
Lights for your house. Lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets that are you. Everything home. These things in chrome. Here's a quick plug. Area rugs. Fast shipping. Wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season. Win the season.
Wayfair.
He's had to go through a lot. But if the Rockies front office, I mean, I guess you're right saying that, you know, fans are showing up and they believe that it's because they're familiar with Ryan McMahon at third base. And
amongst other things, but yeah.
Yeah. That can't be the thinking behind, and I'm sure they're realizing it now, but if that was the thought process, it has resulted in a team that's on pace to win 27 games when the rest of the division all already has 27 wins and we're a third of the way through the year. That was a great stat that you put out, and it blows my mind. But I'm kind of just venting right now. I don't have a transition in my mind. It's just it's ridiculous. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's frustrating because, again, there's plenty of the hardcore fans out there that just, you know, want to send a message and hope that their voice will be heard. And again, as we know, the bottom line is the dollar, and the dollar is good, not great for the Rockies. I think they're very hard up with obviously the TV situation and having lost out about $57 million annually, but there are other sources of revenue that are coming in. You know, the Rockies, you know, if it's funny because, you know, something that you said before, I forget what it was exactly, just, you know, Coors Field is beautiful, and that's why people go to games. And there's a lot of fans that are proud of the fact that they haven't traded away all these different players. I mean, they have enough that they have that reputation, but haven't traded away all these players, and they're doing things differently, even though it's hurt them more than it's helped them. But there's a pride that Coors Field will always just be called Coors Field, despite the fact that had they not come up with their sponsorship deal, which was in perpetuity, the Rockies could maybe bring in an extra $5 to $10 million each and every year with a different name every 6-7 years. That's just part of sports. It's fine. If Coors Field had a different name, so be it. Like, they would call it the Blake Street Ballpark, and everyone we're just calling it Blake Street. Like, that's just what we call it, even though it has a different sponsor for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Take that money, invest into the team, and win. It's not worth knowing the name of the stadium. Like, I think that's pretty silly. It's also silly to say, well, it's pretty great that the Rockies have so much integrity that they don't have an advertiser on their sleeve. That's money that can go into the team, into analytics department, into development, and all kinds of ways to improve the club just because there's an advertisement on the sleeve. And for all we know, it could be because, you know, there are no sponsors that want to be associated with this team, or that none of the sponsors and companies and corporations not only just, again, don't want to see their logo everywhere in terms of the worst ever. You don't want your logo with the word "the worst" underneath it. So that's going to hurt your potential for bringing extra revenue. And, or it could be, maybe there is a company out there that it's fine and can look the other way, and there's no such thing as bad press, right? All publicity is good publicity. But maybe they're not hitting they're not getting to the number that the Rockies want. So again, the Rockies don't want to settle. Instead of taking 75 cents on the dollar, let's take nothing. And that's how the Rockies have operated from a baseball standpoint at a lot of trade deadlines. And so it'll be interesting to see if they're willing to take 50 to 75 cents on the dollar for a lot of their players that are towards the end of their contract or a little bit older players, or if they're going to stand pat and say, no, we will not be bullied around. Watch us be the only team in Major League Baseball to not make a trade again at the deadline, because we have integrity. Asterisk, you also have the worst record in the history of baseball. That's not integrity.
No. And you would sure think that, and I think this is the one big overarching theme that I agree with even the most radical of fans on social media, the thought process that, look, in reality, losing 50 games or no, winning 50 games is no different than winning 62, because you're not qualifying for the postseason either way. And this year, you're not picking higher than 10th. So the thinking of maybe being the worst results in changes, I agree, because you've told me this several times, like historically, and it's trackable. The Rockies are second, third, fourth, fifth worst in the league by record, but never last. And so this is a brand new territory, not just for Major League Baseball history, because no team has ever lost this many games or on pace to, but because the Rockies have never been in the 30th pole position. And here they are.
Unpole position.
Yeah.
The opposite. They're depolled. You know, again, on one hand, I don't know that anything is going to change, because everybody had that thought once they hit 100 losses. And yet here we are 2 years later talking about 200 losses in a season. I forget what the numbers are at this point. But on the other hand, you're right. You're spitting back my own facts to me of like, yeah, this is different. When you can point and say, yeah, but that team, they're worse than us. When there's nobody else to point to, all of a sudden you do things differently. And then you look and say, oh, they did get rid of Bud Black, an in-season managerial change for the first time in 16 years. So there could be some potential in that, but it really would, until it happens, I don't know that it's going to happen. It's like Hensley Mullins. Oh, they got to get rid of somebody. I don't know that they're going to. Sure, they did. Hasn't changed anything. They're probably not going to get rid of Bud Black. They did. Hasn't changed anything. So, you know, on one hand, okay, it does seem like their hand is being forced to make certain changes. The only problem is, again, even if their hand is forced to make those changes, are they just, is that hand being forced being the right hand just put something new in the left hand and it's pretty much holding the same thing, right? Is it just somebody else that's within the organization getting a raise and just, hey, remember what Schmidt did? Just do what he did. All right, I want to get to this question. I haven't read it exactly, but Christopher, thanks for joining. Any reason we don't go down to Colorado Springs and hire some Olympic level strength, nutrition, and wellness coaches to implement something like Charlie's longevity program team wide? The Rockies have been doing certain things like that. I was just this past week talking with somebody from the training staff about all kinds of different studies that they have done in the past. You know, do they need to do it more? Do they need people from outside the organization to create certain kinds of studies? I think they are doing some of those things, but can they do more? 100%. They need to invest in more of these things. And, you know, the Rockies are a team where, you know, they're when I was on Effectively Wild for FanGraphs, you know, one of the folks who run that show, Ben Lindbergh, has a book where he was working with a summer collegiate league team and implementing all kinds of sabermetrics and all kinds of crazy ideas. And they said, look, we'll try anything. We'll try anything once, right? And the only rule is it has to work. So if something works, then run with it. But if it doesn't work, that's fine. But they tried everything. With the Rockies, they are, we will try anything once, but only once. And once it doesn't work out or doesn't work out enough where we feel good about it, we are never even going to think about that. So would it benefit the Rockies to really reconsider some of these studies and again, trying to figure out different things of being successful at altitude? There's plenty of papers that have been written by people in Mexico City and all other, you know, parts of the world. You don't have to necessarily be in Denver playing baseball at Coors Field to really get the benefits of, you know, some of those playing at altitude benefits or to learn certain things that come out of those papers. But at the same time, when it does come to baseball, it would be great to have a fresh crack at it. Like, it would be great for the Rockies at a point in which it made sense and they were more relevant to go out and sign a top starting pitcher and say, we don't care that you're going to have a 4-5 ERA because you might have a no-hitter on the road, or you're going to lead young players and they're going to see what your work ethic and your workload is like and how you carry yourself despite having those difficulties and struggles. Like, it's going to happen even to the best of players. Right now, the Rockies have tried it once, and unfortunately, they've written that off along with a lot of other things. I'm curious, you know, some of the things, talking about what you learned. So what we learned from this past week, tell me, what did you learn in terms of baseball mitts and the fact that they can be worn loosely on the hand and thus can fly off your hand, but it will only happen like once every 10 years, but it can happen because the gloves are worn loose. Did you learn that over this past week?
I guess I learned a version of that. And for the moment that you're talking about, were you in the press box or were you in the stands?
I was in the stands with my dad as a fan. Yeah,
that's what I thought. So if you didn't see it, Adeel Amador, in the middle of a 10-run Yankee inning, threw his glove up at a line drive that had cleared his head.
Or his glove was thrown up and it happened to go in the direction. Let's get, get the verbiage right. For the courtroom stenographer. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, per multiple sources on the Rockies, it was an accident. I think watching the replay makes it tough to believe, but regardless, Amador throws his glove up in the air to try to catch a line drive. It, of course, doesn't work, and fortunately, it hadn't made contact with the batted ball because had it, it would have been a three base error on Amador violation. I don't even know what you call that. Ended up just being a single that drove in another Yankee runner too. It was clear and visible frustration. And after the game, when Schaaf was asked about it, he said, "We're going to get to the bottom of it." I was surprised to see Amador in there the next day because you know, I kind of expected him to be punished, reprimanded in some sort of way, but Amador was back in there the next day as the Rockies lost to the Yankees in the rubber match. I really think the Rockies were putting everything they had into winning that game because they haven't won a series yet. But yeah, that was unique. I've done that in Little League, maybe it was junior high, but it was a situation where if the ball dropped, it was a walk-off. The game was over. That is not what Amador did. Amador just threw his accidentally let his glove hurl towards
the ball. His mitt was loose, and he was trying to jump up to catch the ball that was 12 feet over his head. That's what happened, Noah, okay? Well, what's interesting is you say, oh, he started the next day. You thought maybe he would have been reprimanded. Well, if he didn't start, wouldn't that have confirmed that it was intentional? Or, again, it might not have been, but it would have given off that appearance. So now you have to start him. It's complicated. All right, what else have we learned in the past week? Germán Márquez might not be done after all. Now on Tuesday, he goes six innings, allows seven hits, only walked one, gave up two runs, six strikeouts. Again, pretty good on the road. Three of his last four starts have been quality. And even with the three innings, five earned runs he gave up in Arizona, over his last four starts, that's a 3.52 ERA, a lot better than the 9.90 ERA he began his season with over seven starts, and way better than if you completely cross out that first start where he had six shutout innings in Philly, starts two through seven, that six start run, he had a 12.58 ERA. He's been a lot better and has shown flashes of the old Marquee.
And I love it. I've said it in the past, Germán is the one active Rocky I have his jersey of in my collection. So I've been rooting for Germán for a long time. Now, before, my active jersey was Nolan Arenado, the day that he signed that eight-year extension. So I was very strategic in getting the Márquez jersey. I looked at the contract table. I believe this was in 2021, maybe 2022. I looked at who had the longest amount of time remaining on their contract to get that jersey. So, you know, Germán, watching him have a resurgence is super awesome as a fan. And, you know, he's been super kind to the media. But I think it's big for the Rockies because if, you know, Senzatella has struggled this year and you kind of know what you're getting from him at this point. Freeland feels like it's an up and down battle every time he goes out to start. But for Germán to get over the hump, I think the Rockies needed one veteran pitcher to provide confidence to the rest of the staff. And with Chase Dolander going down and getting hurt with just forearm tightness, they said it's very precautionary. But the Rockies needed this, and he's delivering.
It's been good. Yeah. So if you want to look at the contract table, Tovar, he has the longest deal. So that's the guy to go for. And if you want to get two, Tovar and Chris Bryant. Maybe a Chris Bryant City Connect jersey so that somebody wears the Bryant City Connect jersey. You could be the first. I don't know if he will. What's the over-under on that? Will Chris Bryant ever actually wear this 2.0 version of the City Connect jersey?
It's hard to believe, but I'm also maybe a Brendan Rodgers City Connect jersey. Did you see that?
Those exist, yes.
Yeah. Oh.
You know, I think that's a Nike thing. I don't know because – there was somebody that, and shout out to Manny, he knows who he is. We saw this in 2022. It was like as soon as the City Connects were unveiled, and it was like you could only get them in the store. They weren't like customizing them. And it was a Trevor Story jersey, yeah. Number 27 Trevor Story. And it was like, you didn't make that. How did you get that? And the guy just, he had one too many Pacificos, I think. He just wasn't answering. It was like, maybe I got it at Marshall's. And I'm like, okay, the only explanation was that like he probably did get it at a Marshall's. It was just Nike had to print it up. Who are the best players on the 2021 team when they were going through and making the product, right? And yeah, Trevor Story was there, not thinking in advance that like, well, now we're not going to be able to sell this at all because this guy's gone and a free agent. He could return in free agency. But ultimately, our job is to just look at the 2021 roster and make jerseys based off of that. Maybe there were a couple of number 11 Jose Iglesias jerseys, City Connect, bouncing around because he was pretty darn good. No, that was 2022. What am I saying? He did wear it. There was, yeah, that was a thing. But yeah, so I'm guessing that's where the whole Brendan Rodgers thing came from. But there was no Chris Bryant one. There should have been a Chris Bryant.
It's true. You would think, right?
It's just strange. All right, last but not least, you had a big smile on your face on Friday because your boy, Bo Nix, was in the building. He also came by on Sunday as well. You didn't believe me, but
yeah,
you didn't believe my intel. How was that cool? Like him throwing out the first pitch. And I imagine for a million reasons, at least you can cover, 500,000 of those reasons of why it was cool to see Bo Nix at the ballpark on Friday.
Yeah. Well, number one, I haven't seen a Rockies first pitch from a celebrity or athlete that, in football or basketball since Russell Wilson signed his deal here. And we know how that turned out, but it was really cool to see Bo go out there and throw after, he got drafted last year and basically won the keys to the city with bringing the Broncos to the playoffs again. But yeah, he was there with four other teammates. Will Lutz was there, and it was cool. I got to say hi to him, and he almost seemed caught off guard that someone knew who he was as a kicker. But I mean, come on. Well, it's cool to see that. It was just, we're down there on the field, and I mean, you must be best buds with him because you knew he'd be there on Sunday too. But he brought the Rockies that win on Friday. Some are saying, some are less. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun seeing those guys. And then on Saturday, it was Gabriel Landeskog and Devon Taves was in the building. No nuggets, though, whatsoever. It is a shame that there aren't more notable folks. Like, again, running a business, you are going to bring in your season ticket holders and, your sponsors and all of those kind of things. But if, again, you want to have a different kind of go at it. And look, when I covered a Giants series in San Francisco, there was somebody new throwing out the first pitch that some people I didn't know, but it was impressive. And the people doing the national anthem was impressive. Believe it or not, they did not have a Denver area school choir doing the national anthem at Oracle Park in San Francisco. So I guess that's just a delicacy, if you will, to get in at Coors Field. But yeah, it's nice when those celebrity folks will come out. There's a UFC fighter in the previous homestand. So it's something nice if you do go to the games, but it would be nice to see more of those. I still don't know that we've ever seen a Nugget show up to the ballpark. When the Avs won, they brought the Stanley Cup to Coors Field. When the Nuggets won, Nikola Jokic was riding horses back in Serbia. The Nuggets never showed up.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I hadn't even considered after a championship would be the most logical time to do that. And Kyle Freeland is like the ringleader of sports fans for Denver. I mean, growing up Denver kid and being now on the Rockies, he's always at all the Avs games whenever the Rockies aren't playing. And during the Nuggets run, he made sure to be there as well. So interesting note that the Nuggets, I can't even imagine the last time one was there. Weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I know there are some Nuggets that went to like a Padres game. I think Jokic was there with that group. It wasn't even Padres Rockies. It was just Padres because they were doing like their summer workouts in San Diego at the time. So maybe one of these days.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Maybe the Rockies insider goes out there, gets the arm loose a little bit one of these days. You never know.
Well, look, they've already had me on the Jumbotron. Yeah. And I just didn't get the little Chiron on the bottom. A lot of people were speculating that maybe when they saw me on the big screen, it was going to say Rockies Insider on there. I'll have to talk with some folks over at Rockies Vision, but no, that was cool getting highlighted there. And you got some video of it too, which is cool. Yes. So thanks.
Yeah. I mean, it was like seeing an icon. So
appreciate that. You know what? You should probably go ahead and plug away. You've earned that for the video that you took of me on the Jumbotron. You've earned a couple of plugs today.
Oh yes, that is my favorite part. Find the thing on the screen. There we go. I feel bad for the people that don't watch the video copy because they never get to see that. Maybe the best part of the show. But yeah, I post things and articles at my personal at Noah Spyrick or over at Blake Street Banter at Blake ST Banter.
Yeah, at Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB on Twitter, Blue Sky, TikTok, you name it, Rockies Insider over on YouTube. And make sure you're checking out the Blake Street Banner channel as well over on YouTube. Everybody in the chat asking those questions, appreciate it. We love the momentum you have provided us here today. But as far as Noah and I am concerned, momentum, it's only as good as your next first round draft pick in the NFL draft. So until then,